Good afternoon, everybody. Robin Ayoub here from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another episode. Welcome to another recording. Today is Friday, June 12th, and I think this is my third one today, recording. And I think in the episode count, this one is 236 or 237, if memory serves me correctly. Who's counting? I just want to welcome all of you to another Localization Fireside Chat, where we talk about very important topics on this channel. We cover many things. We cover many human-related things, either technology impacting, either perhaps people evolving in very variety of ways. We talked about earlier about cognitive improvement from or cognitive diagnostics, for instance. We've talked to a surgeon at some point. My podcast on this one was related to spinal cord fusion and the injection of AI in this entire process. So we cover a variety of topics. And of course, Localization Fireside Chat, in the essence of it, is related to demographics, languages, cultures. But what signifies is human. We are human. We have a beginning and we have an end, regardless of what everybody thinks out there. We were born on a certain day and we will leave this world on another day, hopefully under natural causes in a very comfortable environment. And this is, you know, you can tell from my introduction, this is where this is going today. So I want to welcome to the conversation Nikki Weiss, a digital thanatologist, and we're going to try to unpack all that. For those of you who either never heard of it or heard of it, brushed it aside, and never really thought about it, we're going to give you a bit of an ammunition today, a bit of a go-to wisdom, thinking, etc., as we go through this. And so I want to say a couple of things. One is Nikki has built her entire career around that question. What happened to all of us after or as we progress to that moment when we exit this world? And Nikki Weiss is a digital thanatologist, the founder and CEO of Endevil, a creator of My Final Playbook app. It's an app. Host of the Digital Legacy podcast and one of the top 50 women in Web3 and AI 2025. Her framework is four words that stops me in my track, actually, when I read them. Life, live fully, die ready. Nikki, welcome to the Fireside Chat. Welcome to the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to the conversation. Let's get into it.
Such a pleasure and privilege to be here. I mean, these are important conversations, especially in today's age of AI. You know, you brought it up. What does it mean to be human?
100%. Now, when I was prepping for this conversation, and I couldn't help but remembering, in 2011, a colleague of mine, she's currently a senior producer at CBC, and she's a reporter for CBC. She doesn't mind me if I quote it, Colleen Ross. And Colleen wrote a book, an article, May 19th, 2011, that's the date. And the book is around what happened. And it's sort of like my initial thoughts around this topic. It was starting in 2011. What happened to your digital assets after you pass? I think that's the premise of the article. We all create in life, especially now more than ever. Our ancestors didn't have much to speak of. When they left this world, probably people sold their belonging or gave it away to the charities, and that's it. Currently, after you do this, humanity today is leaving a huge digital footprint. And that's what that article was about in 2011. And that was the premise of the conversation back then. Before we dive right into it, for the audience, as you can tell, you know where this conversation is going, right? So don't get upset or depressed or whatever. This is a conversation that we must have, we should have, and we have to be logical about things. Of course, there's a huge emotional package that comes with that. I have elderly parents. I'm dealing with issues right now in my parents' house. I'm actually located at my mom's house and my parents' house. And the reason for the virtual background is I'm sitting in one small room with lots of clutter behind me. So I said, normally in my studio, there's no virtual background. You got an actual studio background. Sorry about that. So before we get into it and dive really deep into this conversation, if you don't mind, Nikki, again, welcome to the conversation. Really appreciate having you with me. As we start on this channel with everybody, if you don't mind, what is the story? What is your story? Where did you start and how did you get here? What attracted you to this topic?
My gosh. Well, listen, we all have a story. And that first story really does begin with being human, because part of living is dying and we're all going to die. We will
die.
That's
not, I hope it's not a shocker to anybody.
No, Well, that's why I'm so excited before I start diving into like what got me here. But I mean, Robin, the fact that you mentioned it's like, this is a, like, I'm fascinated by why death is such a taboo topic when it is the most humanistic thing we will all go through. And death is indiscriminate. It doesn't care how old you are, what your socioeconomic health status. It doesn't care. I've worked, from, losing miscarriage to infant mortality through all the way through that end of life to, someone in their over 100 who has end stage dementia or Alzheimer's. Like, it doesn't care. So why is it so hard to talk about? And now let's add the complexity of the digital piece. You mentioned it. I mean, back in the early 2000s, when someone died, they died with a box of photos. All right, Aunt Robin, how many pictures do you have in your phone?
I'm an avid photographer. I think about 500,000 pictures.
Half a million. And if you were gone tomorrow, what happens to all those photos, all those assets?
Well, I'm hoping somebody will have access to them. In my case, I share my galleries and my photos with my wife. So she has access to all of them. And I'm hoping that she'll be able to do something with them. I don't know what to do with that.
But that's like another level of complexity that a lot of us have never thought of. So now we have not just our physical body and our physical things. Now we have our digital assets. So here's a reality check. You and I, we are the first generation to die with more digital assets than physical ones. I mean, you just said
it is. I mean, you bring a very valid point. You're absolutely right. The generations before us didn't have digital footprints.
And certainly not the volume.
And they were shy about
the pandemic.
This whole digital world for them, it was strange. I mean, the current generation was pulling the old generation in, kicking and screaming, hey, you need to get online to conduct your bankings. You need to get a phone so I can get a hold of you. And they didn't want to. They just wanted to use the old rotary phone. I worked for a telephone company early in my career. And while we're moving everybody to digital lines, et cetera, Nikki, there was one, this customer, because we couldn't force anybody to do, they have selectively to do, to change. This one customer has a house in the middle of the woods, like nowhere to be. You have to drive, I don't know, 100 miles to get to that individual house. And the company ran lines just specifically for this individual house as a rotary phone. That was the only phone holding back the network from moving to digital. The amount of conversation we had to convert from analog to digital, it was crazy. You're right.
I mean, and more here we are. Platform. And now with AI, I 3 months ago, maybe even 6 months ago, I said, the tsunami, the AI tsunami is at our shoreline. Today, we are drowning in it, drowning in the AI. And how is AI going to impact our digital afterlife? Because the reality is we don't own our digital afterlife.
Do we own our digital life now?
No, that's what I'm saying. It's like you have 500,000 photos, but you don't own them. Wherever they're stored, whatever server they're stored on, whoever you're paying storage for, they own it. They can shut it down. Mm-hmm. So let's roll back a little bit. Let's start with, what is thanatology, right? We could even just start there. So I'm a thanatology 101. So for people that don't know, Thanos, for those that are Marvel comic enthusiasts, you think of Thanos as this big, scary, evil guy. Actually, no. Marvel Comics went ahead and took the name Thanatos, and Thanatos is the Greek god of death. The Greek god of death is actually a very benign character. It is the Thanatos, one who serves humans to peacefully transition them to the next afterlife. Marvel Comics just decided to evilify Thanatos and turn into Thanos. So thanatology is actually the study of death and dying. Psychology, sociology, anthropology, and now you can add thanatology to your wordle, to your vocabulary there. Now, I call myself a digital thanatologist because I specialize and I talk to people about death and dying of their digital afterlife. So what we really want to be talking about is, if you weren't here tomorrow, are you leaving a peace of mind for those you leave behind? Think about it. Your legal, financial, physical, digital assets. So for example, Robin, do you have an iPhone or Android?
Android.
If you died tomorrow and your phone died with you, think about multi-factor authentication. How much mayhem would there be for your loved ones?
True.
So I'm an Android user too. On Android, we have to go into our Google inactive account manager and set up our legacy contacts. Is that something that you've done already? But most people, they don't know about that. Most people who have an iPhone, they don't realize that if they died and they don't have their legacy contacts set up on their iPhone, their loved ones would have to get a court order to gain access. I'll give you a minute there.
Yeah, I can see that.
So what has changed? Let me tell you a little bit about how I got into this space of being a digital thanatologist. People like, Nikki, how did you ever get, how does one become a digital thanatologist? For me personally, both my parents, I don't know if you can see, but both my parents are over there. For those that have access to our video, they both passed away before they were 50 of cancer, 10 years apart. So for me growing up as a child, it was just very much part of my upbringing. Now, for some people, that experience crushes them and they run away from it. For whatever reason, I'm wired and I leaned into it. So the first part of my career, I actually worked as a hospice clinician, supporting families as they transition to this end stage of life.
Yeah, I know you come from healthcare side, right?
I have been in healthcare for quite some time, both as a clinician and then being in hospice and working with families, like it's a calling. Have you had any family members that have gone through that experience?
Yeah. I mean, I immigrated recently. Well, recently, I mean, I lived in Lebanon during the civil war. So I know what that is with no support network around you.
And when I was growing up, you know, I lost my father in the 1970s, and grief was not a word. Like, bereavement, mental health issues, that didn't exist. Hospice in 1979, when my father died, hospice wasn't even in the United States yet. Hospice started in 1981. So like you said, there was no framework, there was no support. It was very much like really taboo. So the fact that we're actually able to have this conversation. So I stayed in hospice till I turned 40. And then when I turned 40, I actually wanted to make some money. So I pivoted from hospice work into project management. And that's where I've been for the last 20 years, mainly working in project management in the healthcare space. It was about 3 years ago when my husband and I realized, like, oh, we had not updated our wills since our kids were in high school. And now they're in their 30s, we're grandparents. So he and I started to, which is what you should be doing, right? You should be looking and updating your wills every 2 to 3 years, making sure that if there's a life event that you change it. So he and I were late on our homework. We started updating. Now understand, talking about death is easy for me. I'm a project manager, so dealing with the step-by-step processy, and I found it complicated. Like, I'm like, this is really hard. Like, it's a second marriage. We have adult children. Who makes the decisions? If part of living is dying, we'll die one of three ways, sudden and unexpected, or we might get a terminal diagnosis, or we might need long-term care. We need a separate plan for each of those. The legal, financial, physical, and now the digital piece. Robin, this is like overwhelming and complicated. And the mayhem that ensues when someone dies without a will or doesn't have a comprehensive plan, how does that impact those left behind? So here we are today, 3 years later, and I've come up with a solution. I've come up with technology that supports it, and just feeling privileged that we can have this open conversation.
And you know, it's always amazed with what technology is allowing us to do, right? So there are, as you talk about technology, there's the, like everything in life, you've got people who are pro-technology, people are against technology for various reasons. But then you look around, you see the amount of ideas are being generated or problems that are being solved using technologies. I don't want to say, you know, you do application for financial gain. That's, everybody does that. But the problems that the technology is solving for us right now is amazing. And I really like when I dig in into the technology aspect of what you've created. And I think that's my, I'm going to talk a little bit about digital afterlife for us. But before I dig into it, I want to mention to the audience, I don't know how many of you have gone through this where you perhaps, you know somebody that passed and you look on their LinkedIn profile, it's friggin' scary. The AI app still posting on their behalf, like if they were still around.
Robin, do you know about the patent? Do you know that Meta has a new patent out? Did you hear about this?
No.
Okay. So just, and I apologize for interrupting, but it's
break
like,
the news for us.
Something here. Okay. That technology, that scariness. So what you're basically describing is there's a difference between a ghost account and a zombie account.
Okay.
Yeah. So a ghost account is someone passed away and they never shut down the account and it's kind of just floating out there. A zombie account is when a nefarious player has grabbed control of that account and is now
acting on their behalf,
posting
or pretending to be them or something.
So look it up. December 2025. Meta received a patent that now will allow them, enable them to use AI to generate content from those ghost accounts. Why? Okay. Yeah. Why? Because Meta owns the account.
Not the actual owner that passed.
They don't own it, wow. Right? So now we get into ethical issues. But me why. So people are like, why would Meta want to do something like that? Because in the next 7 to 10 years, they know that there's going to be more ghost accounts on the Meta platform than there will be live human people. So they're going to take those ghost accounts that they own, basically, and they're going to continue to create content from those dead people in order to feed the live people.
Wow, that's scary. For everybody. I mean, think about it. I mean, we all have, you know, I go on LinkedIn every morning and I see like how many people are excited about their postings and, you know, generating content and putting things out, etc., including me. But what, you know, it's a valid question. So what happened to the content? Who owns it? And remember, guys, we're not in singularity yet. Now, project what you are right now, where you are right now, into singularity. That problem gets like quadruple at least when we get to that level.
Oh, the exponential growth of it is going to be. So that's why. So now you're saying, Nikki, well, what is my mission? I can get into the scary stuff. And there's even like, we can go deeper down the AI rabbit hole and how AI and AGI is going to, you know, control your digital afterlife. So that's, let's bring it way up back to the human level. Can we just talk about it? Can we plan for it? You know, can we put
talk about it?
You know, death, dying, incapacitation. Hey, if you die tomorrow, do you have a will or trust? Do you have your beneficiary set up on your bank accounts? Do you know if you want to be buried or cremated? What do you want done with your ashes? Like, these are like decisions you can make and document and share with your loved ones today. So we've taken a very taboo topic and something that is administratively complicated. And what we're trying to do now is what I'm trying to do. I'm on a mission to educate and empower a million people to build a final playbook. Can you build a final playbook? Can you build just a document that says what all your wishes are in one location? So if something happens to you, death, dying, or incapacitation, you can talk to your loved ones. You can share with them. You can change it. Life is going to change. But if you just have your head in the sand and you don't have anything documented, or they're outdated, or here's one reality that's changed in talking to a hospice social worker. I asked her, I said, what's the difference? What's the biggest challenge you as a hospice social worker have today that you didn't have 10 years ago? And she said, by far, people are in hospice dying with the passwords. Would have thought.
They're not giving their passwords.
Or they forgot to give their loved ones their passwords, or they don't remember where they put the passwords, or they don't remember what the password was.
Yeah. And that controls everything in a lot of cases.
Well, at least from, you know, you talk about grief and bereavement from a bereavement standpoint, right? If we get into the grief piece, the grieving process is real. Like, there's, when someone dies or your loss of someone, that's not going to go away. But to have to deal with the emotional grieving process and, oh, by the way, your loved one died in intestate, like they died without a will, they died without sharing all of those passwords with you. Now I have to grieve and fight in the courts, or fight with the bank, or fight with the tech platform because I can't get access. Like, how does that add to the healing process of grieving?
And, you know, one of the digital assets that, you know, we should also consider is that entire blockchain, crypto, and all that stuff that gets added to your profiles, to your other things that you own as a digital platform. That's one. And, you know, the playbook is pretty interesting because most people think about it from a will perspective, but they haven't really thought about the entire plan. And to be honest with you, it has to come from the human being perspective, right? Do you want to leave a mess on your way out, or do you want to clean this up? And do you want to do it while you're cognitively awake, or do you want to do it? You can't do it when you're incapacitated. Nobody will take your signature. But how is that going to get played out? So can you talk to us a little bit about the, you know, in this case here, I mean, I'm guessing in modern age today, an average person dies with dozens of, maybe hundreds of accounts, assets, digital traces. You know, what actually happened to all of it today after they're gone? What happened to it? Nobody got access to it. All this stuff goes into, what do you call it, ghost mode, or so hopefully not zombie mode.
Zombie mode. Zombie is that somebody else controls it. Ghost is that it's just hanging out there at risk to becoming a zombie account. So let's talk about a couple of statistics. One is and focus, right? So these are U.S. stats for me. About only less than a third of the people in the United States have any sort of documentation or plan for their death.
That's scary.
That's terrifying, right? So that means that means 68%+ of people have nothing in place. Like, they're dying in intestate.
Yeah.
That means that if they die tomorrow and there has to be a funeral or some sort of, like, I mean, we have a meat sack, right? You have to have a final disposition. Well, not even funerals, just cremation. Cremation can cost anywhere from, in US dollars, right? USD can cost anywhere from $1,800 all the way up to like $10,000. Who's going to pay for that if there's an unexpected death? And, oh, by the way, now you get that unexpected call that your 25-year-old child, you know, was in a car crash in a motorcycle, you're that loss of that child or the loved one. And oh, by the way, you're going to have to write a very expensive check, or you're going to have to organize a GoFundMe account. Like, these are the realities that administratively we're trying to deal with the human aspect of it, but there's a financial and legal aspect of it as well. So we're not a lot of people are just not educated on it. So here's another statistic. So, right, less than a third of people have even a piece of it, much less a comprehensive, like that's even probably less than 90%. Now, the other piece is that here's a term called unclaimed assets. Have you ever heard that before?
Yeah, I've heard of unclaimed assets, but are you referring to the digital asset in this case or actual physical assets?
Yeah. I mean, the cryptocurrency space is over $600 billion. How many people have cold wallets that they don't share their seed phrase and they die? And there are people out there that are very secretive about that they hold crypto. You know, their family doesn't know, and crypto is not like in your brokerage account, right? So unless you document that you have NFTs or crypto or any sort of, you know, tokenized assets, and something happens to you, death, dying, or incapacitation, how do you transfer that stuff over? Well, it becomes an unclaimed asset that just sits out there.
Yeah, no, absolutely correct. Now, you talk about the four pillars: legal, physical, financial, and digital. Why is digital the one that breaks people? Obviously, because of, you know, the easier to manipulate, hide, whatever. People don't remember what they have out there online. Even people who have done this, you know, everything right from the beginning, they still mess up the digital part, I think. There's a possibility for messing it up.
Well, because it's the word is iterative, right? So in software technology, we're always using agile, adaptive, iterative. The problem is that it's not a one and done activity, is that you constantly need to be updating, iterating, changing. So just like passwords and logins, you need to constantly be updating, iterating in order to best protect yourself, right? From safeguarding and protecting. So the traceability and trackability of your digital assets is becoming more and more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, man, you know, 10 years ago, Robin, how many logins and passwords did you have?
Yeah.
And now, and since the pandemic, I mean, I have too many to count, much less. So I also want to mention, though, that June of 2026, we're currently in a chasm, in no man's land, when it comes to managing passwords and logins. We still need, and I recommend as a digital thanatologist, just because we're in this space right now, that it's going to be important to have a hard copy on paper list of all your system, a password and login system, as well as some sort of digital asset password manager. Like, you need both. Why? Because floods and fires happen and cyber hacks happen.
Yeah.
So we need to create what I call as a physical and digital system in order to manage our digital life. Because like I said, we're in this kind of quasi space right now. Because of AI, are we all going to just go back to flip phones and analog because we don't trust or don't want to participate in that life in the fourth industrial revolution? Or are we going to become the singularity, right? There's going to be people that are perfectly comfortable doing neuro implants and, you know, and becoming a cyborg. So there's going to be this and or.
Where do platforms stand today? And I mean by that is Google, Apple, Meta. Are they making it easier or harder?
So the more mature ones, this is what I say. You know, part of our final playbook is Meta does have a legacy contact system. So everybody should go in and set up their legacy contacts. And again, both digitally and also write it down in your playbook, right? You're going to create this final playbook. You're going to write down every account that you have. And maybe on that account, you'll say, I set up my legacy contacts so that loved one of mine, whoever is going to be my executor or my power of attorney or my digital authority when I can't take care of myself, they'll know which accounts to set up, which ones have legacies set up. You make a decision whether you want to memorialize that account, right? So there are some people that on their LinkedIn or Meta or all of the big accounts, Discord, I mean, the list just keeps getting longer of what your social media accounts are. You need to make a decision. If you're dead tomorrow, do you want to be memorialized and digitized, or do you want to disappear? Have you thought about that, Robin? Do you know?
Very good question. You know, I And the I always think of that actually. It's part of being human. I mean, how can you not? Especially like somebody like me who grew up in the Civil War. It's right there, right in front of me since I was a kid. So you're always thinking about it. The question is, how do you like to be remembered? I guess in which context? Yeah, I mean, I get it. Some people just want to exit and leave me alone, basically. I tend to be on the other side of that. I'd love to for people to remember me for something that is positive. I don't know what that is. It's up to them to judge that. But I do want to be remembered somehow after I'm gone.
You have a podcast, so you're already out there. That's forever.
Yeah.
So then let me ask you this question, though. If since you have a pretty extensive digital footprint because you're a podcaster and you were gone tomorrow, would you want your family to be able to create a Robin avatar? And we can talk about grief bots if you want.
Yeah, I mean, if they want to create an avatar representing me, and if, you know, my brother or my family, somebody, family member decided to do that, I'm happy with that. But I could put that, if you're saying probably you should tell them to do that, I'm assuming.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's part of the instructions, right? Is you know, this is becoming a big deal where, again, in the death care space, it's fascinating how I'm starting to see, I have been seeing people are documenting on all the platforms from diagnosis to death. So they're doing like vlogs, video blogs or video diaries of, hey, I just got diagnosed with a cancer or a condition. And then for months or years, they're documenting their progress all the way to, and I've seen this multiple times, hey, if you're watching this, I'm dead. And they post that last video and lo and behold, they're gone. I've also seen, I find it disturbing, family members who are videotaping and posting, that are videoing and posting their loved ones as they are actively dying. So all over TikTok, I see it, I guess because of the algorithm is on my feed. So that means that, I mean, it's beautiful, the family sitting around with their loved one and they're singing songs and holding hands, but this person is actively dying, which means it is a very vulnerable moment in time for them. You know, they're trouble breathing. They don't look like themselves. When you're actively dying, there's a lot of physical changes that go on. And I'm like, it's like, did you get consent from that person who's actively dying to post their most vulnerable last breaths on TikTok? Like, did you? So there's that level of like, I want to be memorialized, but do you have consent? And what if three children, two of them want to upload all of mom's life, you know, so the whole family can share with the pictures and photos. And now it's on the digital cloud. Somebody else owns it. It's on somebody else's platform, but the one child doesn't.
No, I know. Now, a few weeks ago, I had somebody by name Murphy John on the podcast. We were talking about data sovereignty and who controls your data while you're alive. And you operate a step further, who controls your identity when you no longer speak for yourself, obviously. How big is that from that governance gap, if you will, right now?
So let's talk about, I'm going to say the word GDPR, right? So let's talk about data privacy laws, regulations. So you want to go down that rabbit hole? It's less fun.
No, let's do that. Let's do that.
Okay. So for those that are, I don't know where your audience is located, but for those that are in Europe.
Across the globe. I mean, they've got a European audience here listening to us right now. I know you are, guys.
Okay. So look at GDPR. Look at, right, the general data in GDPR. So it's the general data regulatory GDPR. And so the GDPR, if you read the language in the GDPR, it does not have postmortem. It does not talk about the death piece. Okay. So a lot of the AI laws and AI governance and the California law, California, Colorado, Virginia, a lot of these states in the United States, it's not a federal law, it's state law. So state by state, where in Europe, it's the European Union. In the US, it's really a state by state, but they're all the United States and several of the other countries, Australia, Singapore, Brazil, some of them have pretty strong privacy laws. They've all kind of used the GDPR as the foundation. So the fact that as complicated as the GDPR is, there's still gaps, like who owns your data when you're dead? It's not specified.
So it's, what are you saying? Is it up for grabs?
They're trying to tighten it up now. You know, when we're talking about, you know, the general data protection regulations, it's evolving. It's constantly evolving. The problem is, though, is that industry is moving so fast that regulation can't keep up. So GDPR was launched in 2018. Then on top of GDPR, they started evolving. The AI governance has been built on top of GDPR. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they're trying to do AI regulations globally based on the initial general data protection regulations, there's gaps. It's kind of patchwork together, piecemealed, but industry is moving too fast. The genie's out of the bottle.
Of course.
So what we need and what is the guardrails that are currently in place is the dam is already, the water is already flowing and we're trying to build. It's hard to build a dam when the water is already flowing.
Nikki, what are the term grief bots? What do they refer to?
So let's take the concept of data privacy. And now we're going to take all of your digital footprint and we're going to put it into an AI-enabled grief bot. So the term grief bot basically just means that instead of talking to a human grief professional, expert, someone who is listening to you intently, who has gone, has an education, who has the human touch, instead of sharing with them your deepest wounds and navigating the grief that you have for somebody, now you could just hop on an app and talk to an AI about everything you would have talked to a human about your grief, of your loss, of the pain you're feeling, of how you don't want to get out of bed today because, you know, you lost a child or a spouse or a parent. So there's a lot of benefits there's a lot of benefits to grief bots. That's why the industry is exploding.
Is there an industry for this?
There's a huge industry on grief bots right now.
Okay. Would you mind talking? Do you have any information about that?
So there are companies out there that are offering either the actual grief bot experience and they're promoting themselves as grief bots, or you can simply go onto your own LLM, whichever platform you use, and create an AI agent or an AI chat, a GPT that can support and embrace the grief that you're going through. So what's the difference? It's, again, we're back to, what does it mean to be human? What does it mean for you and me to be, for us to be having this one-on-one conversation versus it's 12:30 at night. You know, my husband died 3 months ago. I can't sleep. I think about him all the time. I need someone to talk to. Well, I'm just going to open up Claude or ChatGPT and just start talking about everything I miss and loved about my husband. And maybe this chatbot, this grief bot, is going to be able to give me some level of comfort in the middle of the night. Oh, and by the way, I'm not spending money to talk to this grief bot.
Yeah. No,
there's a lot of questions there.
If someone is listening to this right now and wanted to have their wishes about AI use of their likeness on record today, where do you think they should start?
So the question again is, if someone wanted to use AI?
Want to use AI, the use of AI for their likeness or somebody creating something that looks like them, and they want to make sure they put that on record, either pro or against, where should they start?
So you're basically talking about intellectual property.
Correct.
Big topic. I'm not a lawyer, so I'm just here for educational purposes only.
I'm not a lawyer, but I pay well on TV. I'm not a lawyer.
So let's segment your audience. I mean, it's challenging, right? I mean, like I said, it is the fact that you can go on Nano Banana and every day there's new, I mean, the technology Fable 5 that just got launched this week.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm using it. It's beautiful.
Right?
It's crazy. Yeah.
Here's the problem is, you know, those very long, you know, privacy, like, oh, you can join our platform for free and just sign here and you're basically signing your likeness away. I mean, every in-person event I go to now, like if I sign up to go to a conference or convention or some sort of event, they have a waiver that says that I am giving them permission to take pictures of me, video, that they can reuse it, repost it. So I'm in this quagmire of like, if I want to engage as a human and I want to do it in public, then I'm giving up my rights to privacy. Mm-hmm. And by the way, every street corner, I can't fly without having, you know, my identity being confirmed.
CCTV, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, so when you ask me that question, you just opened up a can of worms of our identity. I mean, I'm hearing, and we have a few minutes here, so let me go down the rabbit hole here. One practice I know that is now happening is that a lot of teenagers, young adults, they're not going out into public events or going to parties because they're afraid of being filmed. So there are now, there's now a movement.
That's a new one. I thought they want to be filmed.
Not everybody.
I know, but I mean, just a general sense that teenagers love to take selfies, right?
Yeah, but now what's happening is when they do something stupid or embarrassing, it gets posted. It
goes online and never comes out.
Can you look, we're around the same age. Like, there are things like, oh my God, if that ever was
posted. I don't want this to come out of the closet. Leave it in the closet.
Okay, but now because of technology and everyone has a phone and everyone's videoing and everyone's taking pictures, every street corner now has cameras.
Yep.
Right? It is like...
You're being photographed everywhere. I mean, up not too long ago, I heard some agency has now the accessibility or they can access your digital TV and they can engage the camera on your digital television.
So privacy doesn't exist anymore.
You know, as soon as we allowed technology in, now there are some company specialized, and I don't know what your take on this one. I've met a few of them. I think I did one on this podcast, where they're specialized, Nikki, in removing your digital footprint completely. So you hire them, they come in. For a task, they remove your digital footprint completely. They don't exist digitally. So, I mean, maybe the idea here is to erase your digital footprint, or maybe not. Maybe to repurpose it or give somebody else access to it.
Well, I mean, so let's go back to the death and dying from a digital standpoint, right? Because the whole identity thing is based on your beliefs, right? It's, again, I think we're going to see a split of people who are embracing and embrace the singularity, and then people on the other side who are going to be, and I think it's starting to happen, where people are ditching their technology, and there will be a different way of living, you know, going back to basics. So that's one conversation that people need to do. The other one, so let's say people are entrenched with their digital life. Part of this final playbook, part of this, hey, we need to start planning and documenting and putting together what are your wishes, and not just legally documenting, making sure it's executable and that you're able to share and communicate with those that would be responsible, whether it's a human or a company, or I believe in a very short period of time, you just might have an AI agent that is going to be programmed to be able to shut down your life and your digital life. Like, that exists today.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? Some people may decide to do that, not because of anything else. It's just their preference. They just want to do it. They just want to exit.
But by doing nothing, and that's why I'm on a mission. I want to talk to the people that have done nothing, or they have done very little, or they let me please pressure test your plan to make sure that you are covered for your legal, financial, physical, and now digital aspects of the life that you've built today. Because if you don't have a plan and you don't have an executable plan, if you are gone tomorrow, your likeness, your assets, both physical, digital, are not going to be in the control of those that you love most.
Yeah. No, let's talk a little bit about Endevo or Endevo.
Potato, potato.
Yes. However you prefer pronunciation to be.
So we say Endevo, just think of end of life development. That we are trying develop your end of life plan.
Okay, excellent. Now, the concept here, you do not just, you know, I can tell from this conversation so far that you're very passionate about the topic. You want people to find a good way of exiting and plan, well thought out plan of dying and passing on from this life. There's two types of people. They talk about the problem, some people that go up and do something about it. Obviously, you did something about it. Not just talk about the problem. You've built a technology, apps, company around it. Would you mind walking us through the Endevo final book, my final playbook? What does the user journey look like, if you don't mind, for the audience?
So Endevo, we are actually focused on going into companies and corporations to offer this legacy readiness and digital resilience as a wellness program. So that is our main target right now, Endevo, is that we want to talk to companies and corporations, because when you have an employee that is dealing with death, dying, or incapacitation, whether for themselves or a loved one, it does affect productivity, absenteeism, turnover, mental health issues. And that, for the employer, that's their P&L, their bottom line. Now, the employer, they're already offering their employees short and long-term disability, life insurance, and some of the legal services. But because death is so taboo and administratively complicated, the employees don't have a roadmap. And they wait. They wait until an event happens. They wait until the cancer diagnosis, or, you know, the child has an accident, or mom starts you know, has a fall and starts having memory care issues. They wait till the event, and that's too late. So we go in as a wellness program. We're like, hey, life is good now. Let's start building out that comprehensive plan. So with it, what we do is the customer journey is that we go into the companies, just like a weight management program, smoking cessation. Like we'll do an assessment first. We offer a 40 question risk assessment. We call it a peace of mind assessment. So the employee will take the peace of mind assessment. And from that peace of mind assessment, it will target where are you most at risk? And then we build out a project plan, an actual step-by-step process to make sure that you are working through your legal, financial, physical, and digital aspects of life that you've built. And then we start working with you in building out a plan for the three scenarios. First one is you die tomorrow. Unexpected death. What happens? So we'll make sure that you don't die in intestate, meaning that you have a will or trust, that you have, you know, you want to be buried or cremated. Where are your digital assets? Do you have a good digital asset management plan together? We talked about physical and digital, right? To make sure that you have a crucial doc box, one location that your loved ones know where to go, where all of your crucial documents are. And it's a process, right? This is something that is not done overnight. It takes time. Oh, and by the way, you need to be talking to your family about this.
Yeah, I can't keep it alone.
Well, you know, you're in the middle of it right now, right?
I know.
You need.
Yeah, we're all talking to each other. Yeah, families talking to each other.
What is the plan? What's the plan for mom? What's the next step? And that's why what we're trying to do at Endevo is take the taboo out of talking about end-of-life planning and empower people to be like, no, let's de-emotionalize this and just, it's a project. It's got a beginning, a middle, and an end. We're going to identify stakeholders. We'll identify the risks. We're going to look at budgets, timelines, and we're going to iterate this as well.
You know, I always thought about, you know, the spread of the amount of digital content that we put out there. And depends obviously on people and what they do and how they use technology, right? Obviously, they all come various degrees. And I always thought about developing a technology, and I called it the kill switch, meaning at a flip of a switch, I can just remove myself from the internet completely. All digital footprints is erased. There is a possibility for this now better than anywhere else. Like right now, we're very primed for that. My background is technology, programming, software architecture, that kind of thing. I think I could put something together, but the idea there at any moment notice for any reason, death or otherwise, just withdrawal, whatever you want to call it, just flip a switch or run a small program and it just takes you out completely.
I mean, digital.
If that's what you want, digital.
Think yes, and the kill switch is an interesting concept, and I know that there are a couple of companies that I'm working with, you know, that have digital vaults and that they did enable a kill mount switch. The problem though is that it's complicated. Like that's where for me and for Endevo, our future is to tokenize death, is to take the concept of death and to tokenize it. Make sure that it is wrapped up as a real world asset on the blockchain that you could have more control, which is the vision. And Mike and Endevo, we are working hard at trying to bring that to market. But the challenge we're still having, Robin, is 70% of people in the world can't even think about it. So it's like we have to, you know, we have the solution, but we have to have this is the next level of adulting. The next level of adulting conversation.
Oh, 100%. I mean, somebody needs to be adult in the room and have this conversation, I guess.
The technology is easy. Like, the technology is not hard. It's opening up the conversation and saying, okay, if I build this for you, will you use it? And will you use it and start thinking about what does it mean to be human?
Now, it just occurred to me while you're talking, would there be a potential connection between what you do and life insurance companies?
Well, that's all part of it, right? So the legal, financial, physical, digital, the life insurance goes into the financial domain.
No, I get that from an individual perspective. I was thinking like more on the business development side. Can you work with a life insurance company as a partner?
Yeah. So as I said, Endevo's shoulder partners, we have shoulder partners. So in the legal, our shoulder partner is estate attorneys and elder care attorneys. We want to talk and work with them. In the financials, we work with wealth managers, financial advisors, life insurance agencies, accountants, because the taxation after death, and also Social Security. In the physical domain, we work with funeral homes, hospice agencies and long-term care facilities. And in the digital domain, we work with digital asset managers. So we, Endeavo, we are kind of like, we are the glue. We are created a moat because we're all working. It's been very siloed. Like all of these service providers, we're all going after the same audience, but it has not been consolidated into a comprehensive plan. So the long answer to your short question is yes. Life insurance agencies are absolutely part of that, as well as other service providers.
I see the connection there, that entire planning, et cetera, because part of the will, holistic. I guess. Yeah.
It needs to be holistic.
100%. Now, if a CEO listening to our today's conversation and wanted to pressure test their own organization for this risk, what is the one question they should be asking on Monday morning?
Business continuity. Those key players that are running your business, right? Whether it's, you know, a 10-person business or a 10,000-person business or more. How are you taking care of your employees? Not just offering them a short and long-term disability, life insurance, and some of the legal services, but do they have a roadmap? Do they have a comprehensive roadmap? And those key players in your organization, have they shared that roadmap with you at some level, right? Making sure, pressure testing, making sure that business continuity is well planned out, that not one person holds the key. Oh, and if that person has a death, dying, or incapacitation, whether for themselves or loved ones, that the business is not going to suffer because it's built on a house of cards.
Now, we did a podcast here for the audience. You guys probably remember this one. I'm not sure if you do, but we did a podcast on the what happened in the case of a death of a CEO or incapacitation of a leader in an organization, whatever you want to call it, business, however you want to quantify that, I don't care. But that was a topic of conversation. What do we do in these cases? A backup plan. I mean, we talked about it from a business technology perspective, but this is sort of, you consider this conversation that we're having today with Nikki about the extension of that conversation on a personal level as a CEO, as a human. What did you do? Not as a board, not as an executive committee, not at the C level, which you've got your own processes for this. As a person, as whoever you are, CEO, employee, doesn't matter. You know, as we started this conversation, end of life has no ranking. It doesn't matter who you are. Warren Buffett, it doesn't matter who you are.
Indiscriminate.
We're all going to go in the same exit as we all came in, you know, to this world. So, and here's the fun part. You're not taking anything with you, by the way. Nothing you've accumulated in this world, I don't need to preach to the converted here, but nothing specifically on the digital side. Everything we created maybe becomes your memories. Maybe somebody will wake up, say, this person doesn't exist. Let's delete them. I don't know. But I guess we live in a days and age where the world is starving for data. Even dead people's data is still good data that people wants people to make use of it. So long story short is with this conversation is not a nice to have. It's a must have conversation on every level, family level, business level, etc. The one thing, I guess, for me, as we come close to our end of recording, if you don't mind, Nikki, hopefully you're enjoying this conversation. I am.
It went by so fast.
I can't tell. Like, I'm doing these conversations, and I can't tell. I get through 1 hour recording. I think, really? 1 hour recording? I just started. So one thing is I'd like to leave the listeners with, for those who are interested, three things every listener can do this weekend to protect their digital legacy.
Three things. Well, first thing is please set up your legacy contacts on your phone. And this should be a family event. Like, sit down. Hey, family of mine, iPhone has a feature called legacy contacts. If you have an Android, you're going to go into your Google and Active Account Manager and just set that up. And what you're doing is you're starting to think about who are your know, love, and trust people. Who are the people in your life that you know, love, and trust? So step one, three people, know, love, and trust. They don't have to be a family member. It's just step two is set up your phone, make sure your legacy contacts are in there, and make sure that you have those know, love, and trust people in your contacts. And you don't just have one person, right? Because but if you're in that car accident with that person, so make sure you have at least three people. And then the third thing is please don't die in intestate. Intestate means dying without a will. You know, it's just, and that's just one tiny little piece to a very involved roadmap playbook that you need to build out. But at least start to think about if you do not have a will or trust, please start planning for it in 2026. If you do have a will and trust, please review it. Make sure it's updated. Make sure the people that are named in it, you still know, love, and trust them.
And Nikki, 5 years out, what does death in the digital age in 2031 looks like?
Well, we won't own it with AGI. 2030? All right, I'm going to say it. I'm going to be bold. I'll tell you what I think late at night when I'm doom scrolling. I think that, and this might be for another podcast, I think that AI could possibly be the bridge between the physical world and the metaphysical world. I think that AI could be the bridge between the two worlds. So 2030, we won't own, you know, AI and AGI it's going to look different. You and I, we could be dead and gone and still having this conversation.
Absolutely. You know what? A lot to digest here in this conversation. That's for sure. The audience are scratching their heads, I think.
I just, you know, what does it mean to be human? I think that is, you know, if there's a fourth question, it's like, what does it mean to be human? And how do we want to embrace or manage technology in our lives?
Can you leave us with one wisdom? Here's my last question. You've spent your career around dying and, you know, having gone through your bio, and we've talked about it earlier in this podcast. What has it taught you about living?
Live fully, die ready.
Don't go bungee jumping, guys. I'm not responsible for that.
No, live fully, live today, live for today. But make sure that if you're not here today, tomorrow, that you're not leaving a mess behind. So peace of mind for those you leave behind, but live for today, please, every day. Every day is a blessing.
Nikki, I want to thank you. This has been great and well-needed conversation. It's a tough topic. I'm not kidding you. I think the audience is scratching their heads too, but it's well-needed conversation. We're all human. We're all going to die sometime. And this would be one of those conversations that I know our audience will be thinking about much longer after they stop listening.
Well, I'm easy to find on LinkedIn. All the social medias are out there. You've just looked Nikki Weiss, digital thanatologist. There aren't many of us out there. And Robin, this was an amazing opportunity and such a pleasure to speak with you.
Same here. I always enjoy good conversations and I love having you on this call with me, Nikki. I hope you come back and give us a bit of an update. You may have find a new invention or a new process for this.
Every day.
It's very interesting to continue this conversation. I would like that. We live in a North American continent where, you know, the aging population is an aging population. It's a problem for both Canada, US, and most Western world for that matter. And we're dealing with this day in, day out. So we want to make sure that we stay on top of this conversation. I know it's, you know, one of those uncomfortable conversations, but somebody needs to be the adult in the room and needs to have that conversation. Hopefully this channel will be your podium for future podcasts.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. For the audience, I want to thank you in. Thank you for joining us in on this conversation. I love you guys. Thanks for being part of my podcast. I really appreciate you. If you're joining us on YouTube, thanks for watching. If you're listening to us on the podcast streaming channels, thank you for listening in. And if you're reading the blog where I summarize these conversations in archivable forms, thank you for checking us out. I hear you guys are doing well with that as well. And from Nikki Weiss, Robin Ayoub, we're signing off, and I'll see you guys at the next episode. Thank you.